Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios in Knoxville, it's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. Here are your hosts, John Reed and Bob Baskerville.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. John Reed, Bob Baskerville, Sam Beard, top of the morning to you. It's the morning show here on Fan Run Radio, April 18th. As time has kept slipping, and we're about 33% of the year finished already. Bob, how are you this morning, my friend?
Doing good. The days keep flipping on the calendar. You're right, man. I was just looking at this last night with my daughter, who's only got about 5 weeks of school left, and we're hitting that normal time of year where you have to remind her, or if you have kids, got to remind them, like she's in high school, it's that got to finish strong. You've had a really good year, but you're getting the end of school year blues, start getting a little lax, and we got to finish strong. So it's kind of amazing to me when I look at it that way. It's like you said, the year is kind of zooming by. You don't even really think about it. Next thing you know, it's going to be May, and just it's going to be summer. Just keeps going. How are you doing?
I'm sore today. My eyes are matted shut. Need to wash my face, a deep cleanse. Just wash to get the pollen out of it. We played kickball last night, despite the weather being basically the same as it has been the last month. Got out there. It was cold. It was muddy. And we lost. We took L's. The vibes were low. It turns out we are a fair weather team. We are not a team that can get out there and roll around in the mud with you. So we only scored two runs. It seems kind of hard in kickball, but only scored two runs. Lost. It's tough. We were sloppy defensively, too, on top of it. So we didn't bring the offense last night, Bob, or the defense. It was a poor performance.
What's kind of an average score in the kickball matchups? I mean, if you score X amount of runs or points, what's it take to win?
I can't speak for certainty, but it feels like you need to be at least in like the 7-8 run range. So we scored two. It's definitely not two. You're not winning many pitching duels in kickball. So yeah, scoring two runs wasn't good. It was embarrassing. And I was doing it, my arm hurts from trying to throw it. It was a tough night. It was a humbling night. Humbling is what it was. We were feeling good. 3-0 on top of the world. Couldn't be touched. Couldn't be beat. And then we scored two runs.
When you talked about a little Freudian slip there, maybe you were thinking about Greg Doyle. Have you seen all the stuff going on with him?
I think that is what happened there. I've been so focused on Greg Doyle, a guy that I got to be honest, I haven't liked really since the invention of Twitter. You know, that was for some reason one of the first, I remember, sports accounts that kind of ended up on my timeline. Back in 2009, 2010, I was following him. I was like, man, this guy, I don't like him. Maybe it was the cult stuff on top of it that made me not like him. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I've always been a little weary of that guy. And to see him go viral yesterday for weird comments to Caitlin Clark and then weird ways to handle the apology afterwards. As an Indiana guy, Bob, what are your thoughts on Greg Doyle?
So I've followed Greg Doyle for a long time, back before he was in Indianapolis. I think he was with USA Today. And what I liked about him back then was Coach K, he would definitely go toe-to-toe with him on a lot of things tied to Duke basketball, et cetera. So I was like, hey, kind of like this breath of fresh air, et cetera. And then he took the job in Indianapolis with the Indy Star, which long ago was a really revered Midwestern newspaper, but just like all newspaper businesses, they're all kind of just on their heels at this point, and it's a shell of what it used to be. So I thought, okay, interesting move. He lived in Cincinnati, moved to Indianapolis. That's good. That'll be good for Indy. But no, I've seen the last couple of years, it's gotten tougher and tougher to say, hey, I'm a fan. And this one yesterday was this kind of culminated the weirdness. And you're right, he apologized, but still the way it just didn't even feel like it didn't feel like a really good apology. It was all the way around. It was kind of gross. And I just saw a new soundbite that maybe others had seen. I didn't see it. There was the obvious one that he did with Caitlin Clark yesterday about the heart and all that stuff. That seems to be really well chronicled. But then he also talked with at the press conference with the Indiana Fever coach. And the quote was of his question was, hey, you just got the keys to that. What are you going to do with it? And he was referring to Caitlin, who was right there too.
So what's the controversy there? The that it?
Yeah, just the whole fawning thing. It's just a little, you know, given the context of what he had said before that to Caitlin.
Yeah.
It's like he didn't check himself for sure. It's almost like the apology finally came because he probably saw all the backlash and, you know, presumably someone that's a boss at Gannett and Indy Star was like, man, what are you doing? I'd be shocked at a minimum if he's not taken off that beat for the season. There's got to be something that'll happen.
There was a lot of controversy surrounding it and a lot of people mad about it. When I actually watched the video, it doesn't seem as creepy as everyone is making it out, but it's enough, especially now that you have a new superstar in Indiana, that if you bad first impression at the very least. But yeah, the controversy was surrounding it. He was the main character in sports yesterday, and you never want to be the main character on the internet because people were mad and people were after him. And I guess it was CBS Sports is how I originally started following him. He was like the lead college basketball guy.
Actually, I think you're right. I think that was it and not USA Today. Yeah. But I knew he was on a national service.
Yeah, that makes more sense as to how I had discovered him or, you know, started following him even way back in the day before he went to Indiana. That makes more sense. And then I guess it just kind of – he got grandfathered in and I was kind of stuck with him. But, yeah, the apology, like the uniquely oafish, my uniquely oafish way – instead of just saying, hey, it kind of came across a little creepy, I'm sorry. But nothing says heartfelt apology like, hey, here, now click on my website and give me a bunch of views to read my apology.
Yeah. Yeah, he's big on doing that. You know, my column here, you know, he's always done that. A lot of people do, but it's I think there's a good writer there. It just feels like these kind of things are pretty significant setbacks, and he was, I felt, kind of on a decline to begin with, so not a good look. And I agree with what you said too, that, you know, I listened to it, read it, I've certainly heard worse. I just think if you're a city that's trying to set a tone with what could be a mega star in a respective sport, again, if I'm Greg Doyle's boss, I'm looking at it going, oh, my God, man, what are you doing? You just put us in a very, very tough position to have rapport and relationship with that franchise, with that player, all of that.
On the other hand, if you remove him from the beat like you suggested and you put your lesser-known person, because he has won four, you know, Sports Writers of the Year awards. Does it feel like you're cheapening the product and the coverage if you aren't putting your best person on there and not giving it the best treatment? And also, like, treating them like, I don't want to say with kids' gloves, but, like, if you have a dust-up with a man and a professional athlete that's a man, would you jump through these hoops to make them happy too if they offended a rookie star man? Or is it almost more offensive to be like, hey, we're going to just go ahead and we know he hurt your feelings, Caitlin, so we're going to remove him now and just kind of, you know, put somebody else in there to make you feel comfortable? It almost feels a little patronizing that way too.
Could be viewed that way. I think some of it is probably, if you look at how women's basketball has been really trying to emerge and the whole notion all the way down to compensation, other things. I would think that they could raise a bigger stink of, oh, so this is how you're going to treat us. I would think that they almost would welcome someone that wouldn't be so patronizing, you know, however they want to view it. That might not have been his intent. I think he was just gushing over how excited he was that she's part of the town and, you know, helping rehabilitate a franchise. I don't think there's just something that tells me that the Fever management wouldn't look at it that way. It'd be like, man, let's just sidestep a weird situation. We'll trust you, indie star, on who you put on it. You know, may not be someone with the accolades of Greg Doyle, but it may not be someone who will, throw bombs out like that that we're, you know, not entirely sure what is going to be asked and what's going to be, you know, what's going to be said. Is it going to put our players on edge?
That's going to be my new comeback whenever I say something dumb or make people mad. Sorry, I'm uniquely oafish. That's just who I am, a unique oaf. Shrek. Sam, top of the morning to you. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. Doing pretty well. Hurting a little bit this morning.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Some tough.
Broken heart?
Some tough Mexican.
Oh. Well, I hope you wash your hands.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Tough Mexican food, right?
Yeah.
Got into a fight last night.
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
With who? Tough Mexican.
Yeah.
I got into a fight this morning. Yeah, sitting down for sure.
That's a bad feeling that you're already sick.
Yeah.
That your tummy's already rumbling.
Yeah.
At 7:12. That's setting you up for a long day.
Yeah.
Sam, I think. But top of the morning to you. Hope you're well.
Yeah. Watched a little playing basketball. Sat outside.
What were your snap takeaways of the playing basketball last night? The 76ers got booed at halftime. They were struggling. They came back. They beat the Heat down the stretch.
Nick Batum, that was my takeaway.
Nick Batum.
Yeah.
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 Put him on Team World.
Yeah.
Against Team USA. He took down the Heat last night, was the leading scorer off the bench and just got a big block at the end too.
You know that whole hypothetical that was coming out after Virginia basketball in the tournament where it was like if you put one NBA player on this team, like how far can they go? My buddies were saying like how bad would it be if you had to watch Nick Batum on Virginia?
I didn't see the Virginia hypothetical. Whenever my friends always argue about it, it's about the 16 seed.
Okay.
Could you put an NBA player on the 16 seed and make the Final Four?
Yeah.
To which I say yes.
Oh, I think absolutely.
People think no. But, like, if it's, like, you know, Nick Batum, Nick Batum, no, I don't think so. But like, if you told me I got, like, prime LeBron, which is kind of always the hypothetical, you can just drop somebody in, like, I would say yes. It would have to be somebody that could play both offense and defense. But that's what Nick Batum was doing last night. He was playing both offense and defense. For a half, he was as good as LeBron. And then the Hawks, Bulls, what a joke that was. I'm glad the season's over.
Yeah.
Get them out of here.
Yeah.
Bulls Heat for that last playoff spot becomes a little bit more intriguing with Jimmy Butler dealing with an injury. Looks like the Heat kind of in a similar position where they're just ready to go home. I don't know if there's as much of an appeal to lose if you're Miami, just because usually like when these teams lose, it's like, hey, we're going to Cancun. Hey, let's get the offseason. I don't know how Miami feels because like their home is, you know, the beach. They can already have good weather and vacation spots. So I don't know if they're doing the 1-2-3 Cancun during breaks or wanting to go travel somewhere warm because they're already there, but they looked ready to go at the end of the night last night.
Never even thought about that.
I know.
You are the vacation destination.
Exactly. Yeah. They go out of the country usually, but still, you go out of the country because you want
doesn't
nice weather too, yeah.
Yeah.
You're already there. Your spot is great already. Like, I don't know. Is there a private island somewhere nearby? Do you just try to get to the Bahamas? Do you go to Cancun? I guess we'll find out with Trae Young's Instagram. We'll find out where they go.
I was thinking about Jaime Jaquez last night. We've talked about him before. We all love him, think he's a badass player. He's from Southern California, went to school there, then went first job in the league. He's in Miami. He's kind of known nothing but, like, beach cities. Wouldn't be bad.
No, yeah, he is. He's thriving. He's living life.
He's got that look too, by the way. It's like he's got this. I mean, that whole look, like, you know, he'd be a guy. He could easily be just a, like a pickup basketball star, as much as he is an NBA player, yeah, too, with the Maine and all that. He's a pretty cool dude.
Jaime Jaquez, tough Mexican. Sam, send us a break. We'll come back. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Ever been the coach?
Back in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Can't wait to drink some White Claw on Saturday morning. Bright and early. Fan Run open. Signed up two more teams yesterday. Feeling good. Field very close to being full. I'm pumped. The prizes, we have them in our possession. Got a couple things. Got to go pick up the trophy today. Got to go pick up the raffle tickets. And then I think everything will be completely finalized. The guys at Cherokee said, hey, come by, get some White Claws. So I got three errands I got to run after the show. And then we'll be all locked and ready to go. Bob, what is the story of the day here in Knoxville as the world turns?
Well, we're still waiting. In a different time of year, this probably wouldn't be as big of a story, but we're all clinging to it pretty closely, and that is what's going on with Tennessee basketball and a couple of semi-updates. Our guy Igor is gone, presumably. His visit is over, Igor Milicic. In terms of a commitment, there's nothing but silence. We're checking around. There's not a word on that. So any hope that it was going to be like, oh, this is awesome, and I'm all vol, that didn't happen. Heard the visit was good, but, you know, this kind of cursory, you know, I'm sure it was good, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to result in a commitment, but we can hope for sure. The one that we spent some time talking about this yesterday, and it continues to evolve, and that's regarding not necessarily a transfer in, but the status of transfer out, Tobe Awaka. John, you even mentioned your allegiance is kind of fading a little. You'd like for him to be here, but also what's taken so long. And one of the things that I have poked around and found out is to confirm that what everybody's been talking about, this part of it seems real, and that is once Jonas announced his intentions to go into the portal, Tobe reconsidered and came back, and he asked, like, I think maybe I'd like to reconsider, talked with the coaching staff, we heard meetings went well, etc. But now what I'm also hearing is we think we're waiting on Tobe, we being Tennessee. It may be the other way around.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, he may be waiting on Tennessee rather than Tennessee waiting on Tobe.
I haven't seen or heard that anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and it makes a little more sense to me, quite honestly. And so you think about it. Let's dissect it for a second. If you're the coaching staff and – no matter how much you love the kid, he comes in, and, you know, we were talking about this on another level. If somebody tells you, hey, I'm leaving, and then you start to make your alternative plans, and then that person comes back and says, I think it changed my mind. I guess it's not a foregone conclusion that everybody's like, okay, this never happened. Let's just let's reset. We'll be good. It could happen that way. Sounds like maybe it's not in this case. They may be looking at it from the standpoint of, hey, we've got these other transfers coming in from the portal that we're looking at. Let's just see how it all, you know, nets out, and let's see. Again, we talk about chemistry, vibes, all that stuff. You know, Tobe fits the culture. That's not in question, but they've also got other guys that they're looking at, and there may be other guys that they're looking at that we don't hear about too. So that was a little bit of a surprise for me when I heard that, and still, I would like to believe I think we're going to need to hear something soon. I would think if you're the coaching staff, you want to get something resolved, but that was definitely a different wrinkle.
Tobe said he wanted to leave. Tennessee started swiping and hitting up other people. Got a couple dates set up, apparently, and want to kind of see how that goes before they let Tobe know if he can unpack his bags and come back home. Interesting. You had cold feet. You wanted to leave. I made other arrangements. Sorry.
Now, all that to say, he still may end up here. Let's hope. I mean, we'd still like to have him here, but that definitely is a little bit of different subtext that maybe makes the delay a little more understandable.
Feel good about that? So, like, am I allowed to be mad at Tennessee if they lose Awaka and then don't have a better replacement lined up in the portal? Because when you tell me that last update, Bob, it makes me think Tennessee's playing with fire a bit. If they're saying, hey, we're not going to really prioritize bringing you back right now, Tobe, just hold on. Because now if Awaka leaves, Tennessee better have an upgrade in place. Because when that's the update, it changes things. It changes a lot of things with how I view this situation.
Sure does. I think that. And again, that may be, for all we know, he may be out there then continuing his, you know, kicking tires on things too, you know, looking around. And so, yeah, this thing could go in a couple of different directions, you know, could come back where Tennessee's in a position of, okay, you can come back. And he's like, no, actually, my point is, I'm not sure he's just sitting there waiting, saying, okay, I'm going to drop every other opportunity and.
Oh no, and I wouldn't expect him to. No, I think I think he should definitely be exploring every opportunity. The same way whenever he enters the transfer portal, that Tennessee should be scouring and looking at every opportunity, every potential big man in there and getting in the mix. No. I'm not blaming him or expecting him just to sit around and wait on Tennessee to decide if they want to bring him back or not. But if he is willing to come back and he is willing to sit down and get the negotiation wrapped up, and Tennessee's just, actually, we got a couple other things lined up we want to pursue. We want to see what Igor does. We want to see what other names enter the transfer portal. And then you strike out. That makes me look at it differently because, you know, coming in this morning, Bob, I would have described Rick Barnes and the coaching staff as sympathetic figures in this ordeal, as losing both of their bigs that they've spent time and care and attention to developing and have given both of them all the opportunities in the world to flourish. I felt bad for the coaching staff that they're getting left high and dry by both their guys. But if it's actually them saying, hey, hold on, we're going to kick the tires on a couple things first, that changes how I view that. That makes it seem more like just cold and calculated business from both sides.
Yeah. And the other part we haven't talked about, again, we don't know the background on this, is could it also be, and this is not anything, this is just conjecture at this point, but if Tobe's like, hey, I want to come back for this amount, and Tennessee's like, okay, well, give us some time to think about that. Because that may not be the money we have. You know, again, it's not just now players. It's also they got a budget, so to speak, that they're probably looking at as well.
Stinking money. That's what it's always about.
Yeah.
Which somewhat tangibly related, we did get an update on that Oregon State running back yesterday where he's like, actually, this guy's not visiting Tennessee. Like, that meeting has gotten canceled. And that, to me, makes a lot of sense. We talked about how it didn't make sense to have him come in and the amount of money it was going to take to try to get him to come and be like your running back that's going to split time. I don't know if he was trying to use Tennessee as leverage just because he's like, hey, these guys had no running backs during the spring, and they are losing Jalen Wright and Jabari Small. It makes sense for me to use them as leverage, and Tennessee is just like, no. But – take that $400,000 we talked about and maybe put it back towards basketball because they're not big game hunting in the portal for a running back, which, again, yesterday we said didn't make sense, and I guess Tennessee agreed, and when they saw their names pop up on the visit list, we're probably like, this isn't accurate. Yeah, I don't know if Awaka's just demanding money. VolQuest and all their updates have maintained the entire time it's not about money for Awaka. At the time, made it seem like, hey, it's more about playing time and opportunity, which obviously is here right now for Tennessee. Yeah. Proximity to home is something we also looked at and said maybe that matters a lot too. And maybe whenever you start getting down that slope of breaking up, of leaving, once you get to a certain point, doesn't matter if the person you're with changes. Doesn't matter if the situation changes. Doesn't matter if you're a Waka, if you've already made up your mind, like, hey, I'm going back home, I'm out of here. And then all of a sudden Tennessee comes and says, hey, wait, hold on, we got starting minutes for you. Maybe if you're a Waka, it's like, hey, I know you're going to give me what I want, but I've already kind of made it up in my mind that we're breaking up, that I'm out. I've already started making plans going back home or picturing myself in a different uniform. And maybe that's hard to overcome too. But Bob's update today that maybe Tennessee has also got some cold feet was surprising to me because it feels like a Waka would be somebody that would be welcomed back with open arms and they'd be really giddy to have back. But maybe that's not the case.
Oh, I think maybe we see him still. I just, and to your point, what you said a few minutes ago, this may just be, there could be posturing going on too. It's a business deal now more than it's ever been, which is a little tough to see unfold, but that's the nature of what we're dealing with in college sports these days. And then also news came out, and it stings a little bit, but I wish him well. It's, Jonas is definitely moving on, has a visit to Baylor set up for this weekend. So his search is becoming a little more public now. Who knows what's been going on behind the scenes? There's always been things we've heard about other schools, big schools, et cetera, reaching out, but he's starting his tour. His is on the weekend. Maybe he'll not miss class like some of these other guys do.
Good job, Jonas. Way to still be a student athlete. Sam, are you over the Awaka talk? Are you over the Awaka watch? Awaka watch. Awaka watch.
I don't think so, because I think he's an important guy to have back on this team, honestly, and it does kind of feel like if you could get him back, then you can really just kind of start to focus on finding those scores out of the portal and not trying to find those culture guys in the portal. He feels like such an important piece of the fabric of this team just in terms of, you know, how they play and their toughness and mentality and things like that. I think that's a hard thing to replicate in terms of going out and finding a new guy to kind of take over that role. So I feel like if you can lock him down and just focus on getting those scores out of the portal, it seems like a much better strategy for us.
If this has gotten as weird's not the word, but uncomfortable as maybe it's starting to sound as a fan, say he comes back, all forgiven, do we just move on as a fan, kind of erase all this stuff?
I think so. Like, I'll still be excited if he comes back. Nothing drastic has happened just yet.
Mm-hmm. True.
We talked about, you know, you asked with Tyler Barron if we'd welcome him back with open arms, and to that the answer was no. You actually already moved out and left a couple times. You already have put on other jerseys and tweeted at other fan bases. No. You can't come crawling back now, bucko. You made that bed. You got to lie in it. Tobe was, at first, you know, a no-brainer. At first, it was just straight up a business and personal move in terms of just like, hey, I want to further my career. I want to be a starter. It wasn't just like, hey, I'm going to go chase a bag. Jonas feels like he's just out here chasing a bag. Awaka was chasing starting minutes. And, you know, so far, everything has been, for the most part, speculation. That's the thing about the portal is it's just been speculation. If Awaka comes back and is just like, hey, yeah, this is home, and I looked around because of opportunity, but I decided here's where I want to be, that's all it takes. Some people get back on board.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'd still love to see him here. I'm just getting a little fatigued with the back and forth part. But, again, it's the era we're living in now. I'm afraid it's only going to get worse over time. It just keeps happening.
Is there anywhere that you actually care if Adu ends up at this point? The wound for me has healed already with him. I don't think there's anywhere he could go that I'd be like, okay, I hate you now. It's just kind of.
Kentucky or Arkansas would suck, I think. Staying in the SEC, if he just goes anywhere else, I'm fine.
When I heard Baylor, it was kind of like, that's fine. Good for him. I mean, it's, you know, still big program and really not in our periphery for the most part, being in the Big 12 and everything. I'd be fine with something like that. I agree with Sam. Just as long as it's not a team that is really a team in conference, or a team that's really more specifically like a Kentucky, or if Cal got him at Arkansas, I would agree with that.
Yeah, maybe if that actually happens, it'll whip that wound back open. But for now, I'm just kind of like, whatever, out of sight, out of mind. I would like to have some names get linked to Tennessee in the portal, though, like in terms of big men. Like, I would like that if we're just going to play with fire with Waka and we're going to deal with this. Like, I wouldn't mind having a couple of big men get linked to Tennessee, just a couple visits. Like, call the FAU guy, you know, the Vlad. Mini Yurosh. Yeah, call him, see what he's doing. At least, like, get him talking about a visit, because he's in the portal. That's a pretty good big man. I like his game. I know he's probably just going to end up at Michigan, but he ain't at Michigan yet. Why aren't those guys at Michigan yet? Everyone thinks those FAU guys are just following Dusty May to Michigan. Why is neither Davis nor Vlad already there?
I think that, at least based on what I've read, we talked briefly about this, I think, yesterday, that he's bringing in, it's like a dog and pony show, he's bringing in like 7 or 8 players for visits, Dusty May is. And certainly everybody's kind of the same mind that Golden, namely Golden, they're saying is inclined to be going to Michigan. Janelle Davis, people are assuming that, but he's not necessarily shown a lean to that yet. But I think that's probably why, is just he's, again, maybe it's tied again to, okay, if we're bringing in this many guys, we have this much money to spend, where's that money going? And they can't, you know, settle on that yet in terms of what their quote-unquote offer would be to Vlad Golden.
Yeah, I'm almost over the portal updates for now.
I know.
I say that, and then when I get a little bit of a crumb of info, though, I'm right back in.
I know. It gives everybody hope. I have a friend up in Indiana who's an IU fan, and, you know, it's been hard times for them, and again, all of a sudden, he's like re-energized. You know, they got Balo, they got Miles Rice from Washington State. They're making a play for Boogie Flan. So, I mean, it definitely perks up optimism for programs that need that shot in the arm. Tennessee's not in that boat, thankfully, but that's what makes it more frustrating. Is there's things that the team needs, and we want to hear more, and so we do cling to that, but. Yeah, it's just funny. That's, I guess, one of the byproducts of the portal, is it kind of creates hope springs eternal for some of these programs that have been falling on hard times or challenged, like Kentucky, who has to rebuild from the ground up almost. But it's a lot, man. It just keeps going. I mean, the one I heard yesterday was, or read, was there's this point guard from St. Mary's from the mighty WCC, which I know John loves that conference, but Aiden Mahaney, who's a good player. It's, you know, you look at his stat line, he's like 13 points a game, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. Good player. And his AAU coach, this is obvious, it's got to be inflated, but he said, you know, he's heard from 150 schools once he put his name in the portal. And it's like, there's no way that I just don't see that happening. But could he have heard from 30 schools? Yeah, very possibly. That's, everybody's like a coveted asset if they've played at some, you know, high profile mid-major level or certainly a major level, and they've, you know, if they're in double figures in scoring, they seem to be an attractive commodity. It's just, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it goes back to what I said yesterday with Cam Carr. Just if you're a young player, just go ball out in the mid-majors and you become a big asset and a valuable free agent. Something about Ballo playing at Indiana, just getting all these post touches from Mike Woodson, who wants to keep basketball, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s model, just post play. It feels right. You get $1.2 million and a whole bunch of post ups. kind of makes sense for Ballo. But yeah, good for Indiana basketball. I'm glad they got some excitement for them.
Still don't know. You know, that's the one thing is, will all the players they bring in match up? We saw it with Arkansas. That was the story on Todd Golden's first season at Florida, was they had transfers, but they didn't really get in sync. That's always the question mark. And then that's when I try to give a nod to what Tennessee is doing. Maybe they're, you know, I think they balance that a lot too, is making sure that the cultural fit is really strong, because that's a key part of that team. We saw it this past year.
And that was your daily update as the portal turns here in Knoxville. Sam, Sinister Break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Are you ready to play?
We've been talking portal, as probably every college show across the country has had to do this offseason, because it's such a big story. The NCAA, I guess, has come back to the table and put a new rule in place to kind of help maybe clear some things up with the portal. Bob, you got the details on that?
Yeah, I was just reading here. And this was provided by Heather Dinich at ESPN.com. I'm trying to look at what the subtext on this is and why this is important. And they talk about, the headline reads, a new NCAA transfer rule will allow all undergraduate athletes to transfer and play immediately if they meet specific academic requirements. The Division I Council on Wednesday approved emergency legislation announced by the NCAA. And so the whole notion is, there's part of me that looks at it and it's like, aren't we in that scenario already? It feels like people are, you know, players are just, you know, we're way past the time of you announced an intent to transfer and you had to sit out a certain amount of time. What they're clarifying here is you can't, it's kind of amazing that we're even talking about this. What they're clarifying is you can't go and play for two schools like in the same season. There's been players that have done some portaling where they announced they're going to one school and the season may even begin, but they haven't played a minute for that school, and then they announced, I'm going to transfer again. That has happened, but what they're trying to make sure doesn't happen is, this is almost like a professional sports thing where you could play on two different teams in the same contiguous football or basketball season or other sports. But what they're trying to reinforce here, they keep saying this, but it's getting questioned, is if there's like this, as we called it, buffet bar of transfer capability for athletes, what does that do to their ability to be a successful student and actually graduate, et cetera?
See, I've been talking about it, all these damn visits during the week and just running around all semester. What about graduating? I've been on it. I've been talking about it all week, Bob.
You sound like a parent, man. That's some,
you
growth.
Know, these damn kids, you know, it's just what happened to studies.
Yeah.
Student athlete, not athlete student.
But then what's interesting is the chair of the council, and this lady is the deputy athletics director at the University of Florida. She wrote, I quote, "With these rule changes, NCAA members continue to prioritize long-term academic success for college athletes who transfer while supporting their opportunity to compete immediately. We hope that this practical approach to transfer eligibility requirements will encourage student athletes to make well-informed decisions about transferring and the impacts that such a move could have on their ability to graduate on time and their degree of choice, particularly as it relates to transferable credits." Something telling me with a lot of these student athletes, that is not on their mind at all. I mean, that's great NCAA speak, but I just think that my takeaway on this, at least from what I'm reading so far, it just feels like this just muddies the waters even further. It kind of underscores what we've been talking about a lot lately, and that they're putting this in place, acting like there's legislation. I just don't see that this solved that much, in my opinion.
I think it just tries to clear things up. It's them trying to make a rule before, you know, they really get struck down in court again, because right now the rule that was in place was like, hey, immediate eligibility after, you know, if you transfer for the first time, and you have to sit out a year for the second time is what they were trying to impose. That had already kind of gotten beat in West Virginia court, I believe, where they're like, hey, actually, no, that's not good, which has led the NCAA to basically have this rule in place already this offseason, as it's like, hey, unlimited transfers. Just because you transferred once doesn't mean you can't transfer again and play immediately. So this is just them putting it on record, right? Like, is that oversimplifying it? It's just,
no, that's one way to look at it. I would agree. I just when I first saw the headline, I thought, okay, this is going to clear some stuff up. And you, to your point, I think maybe that's their attempt. I just don't know if it does.
It just seems like you can't fire me, I quit type of energy. Like, hey, you can't make it illegal for me to outlaw these transfers multiple times over multiple years. You can't make me do that because I'm choosing to do that now. Here you go, athletes. We love you. You can transfer as much as you want, knowing that that was going to be what happened in court anyways, as it had already happened in a West Virginia court. That when I see that and I read that story, that was my takeaway.
Yeah.
Dear God, I'm tired of talking about transfers. Like, it's good for free agency, but it's bad when that's like the main thing you talk about.
Yeah.
And it is just such the largest part of the conversation now in college athletics is NIL and transfers. And that's not a good thing. And as an NBA fan, you know, I always compare it because I love the transaction there. I love the trade deadline, and I love the free agency. But at a certain point, your biggest interest, your biggest thing that draws people in and gets them talking needs to be the actual games, needs to be the actual program building in college athletics, needs to be the coaches. It doesn't need to be free agency. It's not, I don't think, necessarily a good thing for the NBA that more people care about the drama of the NBA than actually the games that are played on TV. That's not a good thing for the sport. It's good for interactions. It's good for impressions. It's bad for the bottom line when it comes to, like, hey, X amount of viewers are actually watching this. Typically, the viewership doesn't match up the level of interest in people talking about it on the internet, but it's because the transaction matters more than the actual product. And it feels like with college athletics, we're kind of there at the doorstep.
Yeah, and you got me thinking when you said that too. I think there is a difference too with what goes on. We'll use the NBA as an example, is presumably you've got high powered agents and all sorts of people involved in, like, the free agent marketplace, all of that, representing the players. What happens a lot, at least this is what I hear and gather when it happens at the collegiate level, is, again, a lot of these, they're kids. I mean, I know there's some young guys that go into the NBA that may be younger than some of our fifth-year seniors at Tennessee this year. But by and large, it's kids, and a lot of times they don't necessarily, they're taking the advice of parents, the advice of handlers who may or may not be really qualified to be in that role. And so that just, to me, kind of creates a bit more of a, it feels like in some instances, not all, but in some instances, it's kind of a hack approach in terms of how these kids are trying to treat what looks like the equivalent of free agency in college sports.
Even you just then calling them kids, it just feels icky at this point.
Yeah,
and they might be. I mean, you know, we've had that argument with Sam. You know, calling him a kid.
He's a kid.
I don't know. I don't know. I go back to, you can go fight in the war. I'm not going to call you a kid. Are you a full-fledged, like, grown-ass adult? No, you know, I wouldn't call Sam or these professional athletes, like, grown-ass men. But I don't call them kids either. But then I don't know. Bobby, what age does it click where you feel like, hey, I'm a grown-ass man? Do you have to have a couple kids? Do you have to actually, like, you know, work in an oil field? Do you have to do something physical? I don't know. Maybe it's just life experience, but I was curious at what point that clicks.
The only thing I can draw from is, I mentioned earlier in the week, my oldest, our son was in town, and he's 24. He'll be 25 in about 2 months. And what my wife and I were struck by after we spent some time, and we've been seeing it before, obviously, we see him pretty regularly, but it's different when he comes back home and he's like staying in your house and all that, back to, and you think back to the times when he was in high school and you wanted to strangle him and, you know, other things like that. And now it's just like, he gets it. He's grown up. And I'm not saying, okay, age 24 is where the line is, but I think there is a time that happens. Maybe it's towards, you know, it's different with, you know, not everyone's the same. You know, Sam acts like he's about 40, but I think that, you know, at some point you just kind of figure it out where it's like, okay, I'm going to start focusing on this. And it's just being more grown up, having different perspective.
But do you consider your son, who's 24, about to turn 25, would you consider him? Do you put him under the grown-ass man category? Not an adult, not a man, just, you know, the extra oomph on it.
Yeah, I would say so. And again, that's not going to preclude him from probably a few bad decisions down the line. But not, we're not sweating that on a regular basis at all. We feel like dude's, you know, he's functioning in society, has a good job, owns his own place. You know, he's doing all right. He's doing all right. And so I would say somewhere in that range. And again, some are more mature than others, you know. It just varies.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes at 34 I still don't know if it's clicked. I'm just like, "Hey, I'm an adult, I'm a man." Yeah, I mean, I take care of myself, but I don't know.
I was just about to ask, the way that you framed the question, it felt like you haven't clicked yet.
Sometimes in my head, like, I'm still, I don't want to say like a kid, but like, I don't feel 34. Like, I don't feel the way that I would view other 34-year-olds, or especially when I was your age, like looking at 34-year-olds. Like, it still hasn't clicked for me. Like, I still feel young to a degree, and that's weird. Like, maybe it's because I don't have, maybe a man needs kids. Maybe he needs responsibility like that. Maybe I'm an outlier here, but like, yeah, it does feel weird in my own head. I was talking about that with friends, you know, just, we went to Detroit, just talking about that. Like, we're old.
You're not old, man.
Well, no, but I mean, like, we are, like, compared to what we would think whenever you're, like, in your early 20s. Like, I mean, yeah, like, when you're looking at people in their mid-30s. But, like, in my head, like, I'm not that. So I'm still just, like, hanging with the boys, you know, still
you like, feel 34.
Yeah, I basically feel the same way I did in college for the most part, right after college. Like, it's weird. It's weird. But then I wake up, my back hurts a little bit. My knees pop a little bit. Then I'm out playing kickball. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm all over the place.
Hey, man, it's like the saying goes, it's just a number. I mean, I think back to COVID when it was not that long ago. I mean, it was 4 years ago, but because you had a lot of time to kill. I'm in my house playing Xbox, you know?
Nice.
Yeah. That's probably not common for someone my age, but it's just, you know, that doesn't mean, you know. So, like I said, sometimes you just got to treat it like it's a number.
Yeah, no, I mean, I get that, but just, 24, 25, I definitely wouldn't have considered myself a grown-ass man, so it's weird. Like I said, sometimes it hits now, sometimes it doesn't, and I don't know, maybe it's a me problem. Maybe I need to go back to the oil rigs. Maybe I need to get out there and do some manual labor, connect with the earth, just get away from the microphone, start doing some actual things to contribute to society. Build a house. Anybody laying brick? Anybody need some help laying brick?
You don't want to do that.
I don't want to say I want to make it my full-time gig, but just go there and maybe build one house. That way, when I drive by it, I'm like, hey, I helped lay the brick for that. You know why? Because I'm a grown-ass man. That's why.
We haven't even asked Sam, who's sitting here, and, you know, do you feel – where do you feel you're at right now? You feel you're
– Definitely not a grown-ass man, yeah.
Yeah.
Sitting here at 23, I'm not a – absolutely not feeling that way. I still feel pretty young.
Maybe these college kids, though, like in the transfer portal that are out here making seven figures, maybe they do feel that way. Maybe Ballow, as he goes to Indiana, maybe that's it. Maybe he's like, hey, yeah, I'm established.
I'd say Ballow's a grown-ass man, if nothing else physically. I mean,
if somebody came to me and was like, hey, man, I'll offer you $1.2 million to play basketball, I think I'd feel like a grown-ass man.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. He is a brand. He is an entity on his own, and you know, he's out here making big time money. So So good for him. Caitlin Clark, also a grown-ass man, apparently, as she got that eight-figure deal from Nike. So she is a brand. She is an entity. She has a logo. She needs a solution. Well, I got a suggestion for you, Caitlin, if you're listening. Nike, yeah, they maybe know what to do with your logo. That's fine. But if not, Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics, they can help get you on the right path. If you need merchandise, if you need promotional items to give away to represent your brand, they can help. Check out Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. You have a logo, they have a solution, from custom apparel to headwear and promotional items. Logo Solutions is your one-stop shop for all of your branded merchandise needs, made right here in East Tennessee. Be sure to give them a call for all your logo needs, 865-966-3434. That's 966-3434. Logo Solutions, powered by SM Athletics. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two with a recap of the night before. Stick with us.
Hey, guys, it's Logan Quinton.